The Franchise Geeks present Social Geek Radio. Hello, geeks. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media consigliere. Today's episode is brought to you by Social Joey and Naranja. We've got a new milestone here, geeks. Episode 400 of Social Geek Radio. Thanks for all of the streaming and downloading over the past 10 years and getting so many good conversations in. One more thing I want to ask, if you like what we're doing here, please head over to the iTunes store and leave us a review and be sure to tell a friend about us. All right, today we're talking complementary branding with Greg Sossaman. Greg is the CEO and co-founder of Topper's Craft Creamery and also the author of the new book, Inside the Box, The Power of Complementary Branding. And he joins us right now on Social Geek Radio. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jack. Thank you. It's an honor to be here, and a particular honor to be here on your 400th episode. So thank you for having me.
You bet. We saved it just for you, Greg. Guest number 400. So I really want to dive into the idea of complementary branding. I'm fascinated by it. But first, give us a little background on yourself. What's your story?
Yeah, you know, I've been in the franchise business my whole career. Domino's pizza guy, kind of on the fast track. I was a director at 26, but I got into it because I really wanted to be a franchise owner. And so just before we turned 28, my wife and I worked out a deal to buy the Domino's pizza franchises in Gainesville. We were up there for 6.5 or 7 years. We sold them to move back down to the Tampa area to be around family. And then I went into the corporate world. I was with Dunkin' Donuts, Baskin Robbins for 7 years, which 2 years of that, the last 2 years, I was on the complementary daypart branding task force. So our job was to figure out how do you take Dunkin' Donuts, put it together with Baskin Robbins, and then Togo sandwiches, and make it all integrate and work together. And then I left that to go work with Beef O'Brady's, doing franchise sales and operations for the U.S. And then nearly 13 years ago, my partner Wade Oney, he and I co-founded Topper's Craft Creamery. So Wade was the COO that built Papa John's to a $1 billion brand with he and his team. So when he said, hey, do you want to co-found and run a brand? It was kind of a no-brainer for him. So, and here we are today, 13 years later.
Yeah. And I love the fact that you circled back to this idea of complementary branding. When someone tries to explain complementary branding, I think Baskin Robbins and Dunkin' Donuts, I think those two words or those four words come out pretty immediately when we try to define complementary branding.
Sure. You know, and I think that I think it was probably started by Starbucks, you know, over 20 years ago when you'd go into the lobby of a hospital or a hotel or you'd go on to a military base, you know, and you would have this coffee that was unbranded and typically not very good. And Starbucks rolled out their We Proudly Brew and they said, gosh, if you're going to have a product, we're going to give you a brand name, which certainly 20 years later, Starbucks is so much more recognizable than they were then. But we're going to give you a high quality product. We're going to give you the equipment. And then we're going to give you the training and the support, as well as the supply chain to operate this. So we're going to make it simple for you. So instead of that swill that they were serving in some of the, you know, in some of the public areas, you know, they give you this good quality branded product. And certainly it was more, but it was worth it. And so I think that was the genesis of it. And then over the years, different brands have put together what I would call more co-branding. So when you look at the Pizza Hut, KFC, Taco Bell model, they were putting brands together. Although I think in all the research that I gathered, it seemed like while they were putting them together, they weren't really integrating them. And I think it's the difference between stacking blocks together and putting Legos together. You know, they, you know, with there wasn't, they were sharing common area, restrooms, back of house, dining, parking lot, but they weren't putting the brands together. And so complementary branding is how do you fit that together? And with the, there was that special 2-year task force, the complementary daypart branding task force, and that was our job. Figure out how do you put the puzzle pieces together to make sure that it fits and comes out with this nice symmetrical finished product.
So tell us how you did that. Is it a matter of integrating not just common areas and things like that, but actually integrating menu items and maybe integrating marketing of those brands together in a small town or a local neighborhood or a suburb? How did you do it?
Yeah, and there's a bunch of different pieces to the puzzle. So when you start, the first question you got to ask yourself is, did the brand fit together? And so it's a, and not to be disrespectful to either, but Coach purses won't be sold in a Kmart. It doesn't fit together.
Right.
And so that brand equality, is each brand going to benefit from the other brand's either reputation or that brand's distinctiveness in the market? It's just, even if it's not a known brand, is the quality of that brand so good that it's going to enhance the view of that brand when the existing customers come in and sample it? But there's a lot of elements to it. And so part of what I wrote about in my book, and we'll talk about that in a bit, I guess, is Inside the Box, the Power of Complementary Branding, is how does this puzzle fit together? So you've got that brand equality issue, and then you have the simplicity issue, because the simplicity is a real key factor. Let me use a quick way to describe the simplicity. One of the genius things that I've seen recently is Pizza Hut paired with Cinnabon. And so when you go on Pizza Hut's website and order, you can get a Cinnabon order of 10 mini cinnamon buns. And so that's such a better option than just the, the sugar cinnamon coated dough that all of the other pizza seem to offer for a dessert. So you've got this great branded product, but the simplicity of it. I made a couple of orders. I went down to my local Pizza Hut and I said, walk me through the process. The guy said, it's really simple. We get a case of frozen dough in. We put 10 little cinnamon minis in the pan that it gets baked in. We cover it, put it in the walk-in. It tempers and thaws, so it's not frozen any longer when they get an order. They put it on a screen. They cover it. They run it through the pizza oven the same time and temperature as the pizza that's going through. When it's done, they put it in a logo branded box with Pizza Hut and Cinnabon. They put a little bit of icing on top of the cinnamon, close the lid, off you go. The simplicity is remarkable. So the incremental labor and expenses to do that product is literally zero. The prep time and additional time that's needed for labor to run that and assemble that product through to deliver it is almost nothing. So really the only incremental process you have there is the cost of food. And so simplicity is a key. You've got to have a physical plant to do it. So in that particular case, there's no additional real space needed. But if you've got a location that maybe wants to add smoothies or cookies or pretzels, you have to have space for that oven in order to, in order to make that work. And in some cases, the space doesn't fit, or in some cases, you might have 8 linear feet. In other cases, you might only have 2. So you have to look at the physical plant as another piece of that.
And the brilliant part about that example is they already have an oven, and I love that you said that it's at the same temperature, right? You don't have to change anything. You can just run some Cinnabon through there and voila.
Right. And I think that's the important part of it is when you're a brand, so Cinnabon engineered this to work for Pizza Hut. So I'm sure if you put a full-size cinnamon bun at the same time and temperature through, it probably doesn't work as well.
Yeah.
And so it's the brands engineering their product to be able to function in the existing cross-use of equipment in the host facility. And that's really understanding the questions to ask and the processes to go through on figuring out how do we make this work? Because the payoff for that operator, if you're if you only add $100 a day in that complimentary day part, if you're a struggling operator, that $100 a day really should be at a 50% profit. Mm-hmm. And so if you're keeping $50 a day in profit, that's a little over 18,000 a year. I mean, that could be college tuition for the local college. And so it could really be a difference maker for some of these operators.
Yeah. And I love it from the brand's point of view that someone like Cinnabon, where they don't have, you know, however many thousands of Pizza Huts there are across the country, they now have a local presence in all of those little towns.
Exactly. I mean, here locally, we'd have to go up to the Westfield Town Center Mall in order to get Cinnabon. Now I can get it at the local Pizza Hut that's a mile away from my locations.
Yeah.
And the reality is, this particular location is right there in a shopping center. And so there are 30 businesses within a quarter of a mile of their location. And so, gosh, what happens when all of them find out? Maybe they're going to do some type of a sampling program or something to get people to be aware of that. How many people on their break from the nail salon or the gym or the pool store are going to come down and get one or two orders of the cinnamon minis, either to have as an afternoon snack or to take home to their family for a Saturday morning breakfast?
Yeah. And I think it's scaling it out that way for more customers. But I think just going kind of back to the branding conversation, it isn't, you know, in this example, the Pizza Hut buns, right? It's the Cinnabon, right? With their logo and their colors and their brand out there. Do you see that giving a lift to both of the brands that, you know, now there's this partnership and it isn't just, you know, the Pizza Hut brand buns, it's actually Cinnabon. Do you see a lift there?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I see a lift on both. And I see the lift with Pizza Hut is the Cinnabon quality is just excellent. I mean, all of us can measure in our mind. So on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, where would we measure the Cinnabon quality? You know, it's very, very high. And so you look at Pizza Hut quality, which is also strong. And does Cinnabon fit with that? Does it maybe even lift it up? It's hard to say. I think it depends on your perception. Some people might say Pizza Hut is a little bit higher. Others may say Cinnabon's a little bit higher. For me, Cinnabon is very much toward the top of the chart. Mm-hmm. The other side of it for Cinnabon is by doing this in the simplicity that they're doing it. So you made a comment of thousands of locations. Think about this from a parent company brand standpoint. What if just the numbers of Pizza Hut? So if Cinnabon is doing $50 a day or $100 a day, you know, if they're making, you know, whatever they're making, when I bought them, they were $5.99 for an order and you had to order two. It was the current promotion that Pizza Hut was running. So if Cinnabon's making $1 off of every one of those orders, but now you're in 2,000 Pizza Huts or however many they have, and they're selling and they're making that dollar off of each order and they're selling however many orders a day that you look at that. When you multiply that out from a parent company standpoint and look at that from the numbers and what that adds in EBITDA, you know, a net profit for the parent company, and then you look at some of the multiples that some of these companies are trading at, adding the right complementary brand. And I have to tell you, there's no one real unicorn brand. So Cinnabon is not going to fit in 100% of every place that wants a complimentary brand. You know, there's just not one single that does that. I mean, coffee and cookies are probably the two closest categories to that. But boy, where it fits, you know, there's going to be some places it's a great fit. And they might sell 100 orders a day of that. Other places, they might sell 5. And so, but either way, the unit economics for Cinnabon for each one of those locations is just really, really strong for the parent company as well.
Does it really have to lift both brands? You know, does it really need to be symbiotic like that? Or do you see some examples where it still works, even if one brand is kind of coming out, quote unquote, ahead of the other brand?
Yeah, I think that, and so I think it's, I mean, one brand is always going to come out a little bit ahead of the other, but there has to be something in it for both brands. You know, one of the other things that I think is important is synergy. You know, if it's a, you know, where does a cookie, you know, fit in, and maybe what synergy? So we just added Otis Funkmeyer cookies to one of our locations. And so we're doing cookie sundaes and we're doing cookie ice cream sandwiches. So if you're doing something, if you're a pretzel brand or you know, or another type of brand, where does that fit in with the existing product? And so if you're a hot dog brand, you know, and you're not carrying pretzels for whatever reason, if you would add a pretzel brand to that, well, for the hot dog, you're going to have the mustard, you're going to have a cheese sauce, you're going to have some things like that. And mm-hmm. so those pretzels could tie in very nicely with the product. And maybe instead of a hot dog and fries, maybe it's a hot dog with an order of pretzel nuggets as the side. And so it's really looking at the synergies of the brand and kind of creating a 1+1=3 type of a scenario, I think is really that's your ideal scenario.
I love that idea of 1+1=3 when it comes to putting a couple of brands together. The book, by the way, is entitled Inside the Box, The Power of Complementary Branding. Tell us about some other brands that maybe you found something that was unexpected or that surprised you.
Well, it was, I was fortunate in my research to run across a guy named Ed Renzi. And so one of the things I was asking is who was in charge at McDonald's when they put soft serve into their locations? And after I did some digging, I found Ed Renzi, who was the president and COO of McDonald's North America. I was able to connect with him and we sat down, and absolutely one of the most fun guys to talk to, but so very gracious. I expected 20 minutes. I got 2.5 hours, and Ed has since, Ed's a guy I've stayed in touch with.
Nice.
And he was telling me some McDonald's stories. And, you know, when I asked him, I said, well, why did you include soft serve? You know, because that was a big deal. Because some of the research I had just found a statistic that in 2014, McDonald's did a summer promotion and sold 67 million ice cream cones in a 3-month period in the summer. And I said, why'd you add ice cream? He said, Greg, we needed to have a product that would be a complimentary product that we could upsell to kids with a Happy Meal. Mm-hmm. And he said, we were also looking for something to bring our seniors into the locations because we weren't getting as much of the market share of the senior citizen as would have liked. And that soft serve ice cream is a perfect product in order to get them in for that afternoon or evening day part. And, you know, the reality is when you look now 25 years later from when they offered that, look at how many people have gone to McDonald's and just got an ice cream cone or an ice cream sundae. And so it's become much a part of their brand.
Yeah. And stop into a McDonald's on any given afternoon and you'll see a lot of seniors having coffee and soft serve, and you'll see a lot of Happy Meals. That's got to be a big chunk of the business now, 25 years later.
Exactly. And I think that goes to the core of what complementary branding is how can you add visits, you know, to what you currently have, or add current sales from a product that you don't have that's not going to cannibalize what you're doing. And complementary branding really talks about what is our core competency, you know, what provides us with a competitive advantage over other brands that are doing similar things to what we do. And Ed had a great story about core competencies. He said, listen, he said, we rolled out a pizza product. And he said, Greg, it's the best pizza I've ever tasted in my life, and I've had a lot of different pizza. And he said, every time we did a blind taste test, we won with this pizza. And they compared against all of the national brands. They compared against local brands. He said, every time we did it, we won. He said, and it was a blind taste test. And then we identified it as McDonald's. And he said, when we identified it as McDonald's, we never finished better than halfway up the pack.
Wow.
He said, the reason for that, when we did all the research, he said, people did not expect a really high quality pizza from McDonald's. McDonald's core competency is grab and go, you know, eat in the car on the way.
Right.
It wasn't pizza. And their customers rejected because it wasn't their core competency. And that has just continued to kind of pervade the message that I'm getting out there. And so why do you bring in a branded product? Because it's a better product, and because of the operating systems, the level of expertise is so much better than if you went out and tried to develop it on its own. And Cinnabon with Pizza Hut is just a fantastic example of that.
Yeah, love that story. And you did have Ed Renzi write the foreword to your book, by the way.
He did. Yeah. We were, I was very honored. And after we met him and I talked a little bit, I said, Ed, you've got such a great story. And writing a foreword to a book is that's the biggest choice that I think you make as an author. And so I asked him and he was so gracious to say yes. And he's just just a great guy. And he's actually since joined our advisory board. So we as an emerging brand, as we still are growing, you get a couple of people on our advisory board, and we asked Ed if he would join our advisory board, and he graciously said yes. So we're glad to continue our relationship with him. He's just such a knowledgeable guy.
Perfect. Complimentary branding on your advisory board. That could be your next book. There you go. And you also had a couple of my other favorite franchise industry folks, Lane Fisher, Lisa Oak, and a few others contribute to your book as well. So that's fantastic. Last question. What inspired you to write the book? Did you ever really plan on being an author, or what led to this?
You know, Jack, I did not. And so it's funny that you ask, and thank you. There's a commitment that we have, I think, as human beings to try to make things better. And so, you know, gosh, it's been more than 15 years ago that I was exposed to complimentary branding when I was on the Allied DMEC, the Dunkin' Donuts, Baskin-Robbins, Togo's Complimentary Branding Task Force. And I really liked it. It's kind of, you know, different people have different fascinations. And I enjoy the title Social Geek Radio. And so I have to tell you, I'm kind of a geek. I mean, I kind of nerd out on the complimentary branding because it's a puzzle. And the successful integration of the puzzle is really knowing what questions to ask and all that. So it's been this wonderful challenge. And so when we have done over a dozen different pilot tests where we've taken different products and different venues, tried different things. And we did that by design because we knew that this was something that was going to work. And so even back when we engineered Toppers, we started in 2006, that was part of our plan. We just didn't know when we were going to roll that out. And we had this great ice cream brand with this great recipe that we created. But, you know, what we found is that the financials of standalone ice cream shops are just not very good. So typically you have to be in a beach or vacation resort or in some of these non-traditional locations. But the freestanding ice cream only locations that were in Publix or Kroger anchored centers, you know, grocery stores and all that, they're going away. Mm-hmm. And so we engineered this from the start to succeed as a complimentary brand. And in 2012, we did our first one in a J.P. Morgan Chase cafeteria here on the east side of Tampa. And so it's just, you know, and from there we've continued. We have done it with brands like Marriott, Wyndham. And so we've got our product in a Starbucks we proudly serve in the Tampa Airport Marriott. So it's just, there's synergies, and we've continued to grow this thing in the right way with the right brands, because we just see this making tremendous sense.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing your story today. One quick note, speaking of some of those great brands you just mentioned, we're seeing them all this week at the International Franchise Association's 2019 convention right here in Las Vegas. And it's been especially great catching up with our friends from Naranja. Naranja's franchise management software helps grow your business and ensures brand consistency through lead management, central operations and communications, field audits, and local marketing. Naranja is working with over 300 franchise brands and has added 200 brands in the past 2 years alone. So be sure to stop by and see Naranja this year at the IFA 2019. They're in booth 320, that's booth 320, and check out the launch of Emax Pro, which includes auto text replies to new franchisee prospects. I love that. Learn more about it today at naranja.com. Naranja, simply succeed. Greg Sossaman, thanks so much for joining Social Geek Radio on episode number 400. And tell us where our listeners can reach out to you and find out a little more. Maybe they've got some questions about complementary branding that they would like to throw your way.
You bet. And thank you once again for having me. I'm just so honored to be on the 400th episode. You can go to topperscraftcreamery.com. That's our website to give you a little bit more information on what our brand is and what we do. There's an assessment on there if you want to figure out, does it make sense for me? And all of my contact information is there. If you're interested in my book, you can go to Amazon. It's available in paperback and in Kindle. You can just Google my last name, or you can Google Inside the Box, and you'll find all of the information on there. If you want a more extended view, Amazon provides a considerable amount of information under the author biography, and so there's quite a bit of information there to learn more. My contact information is on there as well, and I would welcome the opportunity to talk to anybody, whether it's about Toppers adding soft serve, or if they just want to find out, hey, I'm a pretzel brand or a smoothie brand or a cookie brand, what might make some sense for me? So I would welcome the conversation, because this is not a franchise trend. We really see this as a movement and moving toward a new normal, something called fractional franchising. And we think this is going to really start moving forward.
Fractional franchising. Love it. And we will have links to all of those places on our socialgeekradio.com website and Facebook page as well. Greg, thank you so much for joining, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Thank you, Jackson. Privilege to be here.
Thanks, everybody, and good night.